Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Got Matt Moore off a fresh night of sleep. You went to bed early last night.
I did. I bailed. I looked at the slate and was like, you know, this doesn't look as good as it did to me earlier in the day. I don't really care about this. And I was in pretty rough shape from not sleeping and working on various columns and stuff. So I was like, screw it. I'm going. And then I got up at like 11 o'clock, and from 11 o'clock till 2 in the morning, I watched House of Cards on Netflix.
So you missed nothing, because that was a pretty boring night of basketball. What was nice, though, it wasn't bad basketball, it's just it wasn't that exciting. What was nice, though, is that they were all early games. So, like, local time for me, everything was done by, like, 10:15,
which was really nice. Moving to Mountain Time for the first time in my life. This is the first time in my life I've ever lived outside of Central Time.
Yeah.
So, a lot of things take getting used to out here. Like, football starts at 11, and different shows. The NBA is really weird because it's like 5 o'clock, bam, things start. Like, yeah. Games are on at 5, which really screws you up when your wife has about a 30-minute window in which she insists to watch to have dinner.
Like, sure.
My wife, if it's 4:50, she's like, "What are you doing?" But it's not time to eat. Yeah, are you crazy? It's like the middle of the afternoon, and if it's 5:31. Feed me. Like, she turns into Zool. So. I have a very narrow window in which to hit, so it's always kind of a complication. But I will say that's been one of the nice things is I'm used to having to stay up till 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning writing and kind of digesting games. And instead it's like, oh, everything's kind of over.
Yeah, the weird thing is that, you know, for pretty much the first 28 years, 29 years of my life, I lived in the Pacific time zone. Yeah. So, like, games start at 4, like, you know, football starts at 10 a.m. Like, you just wake up out of bed, roll out over to the, you know, into the couch area and just, like, start watching football. Like, here people get up and go to breakfast for football, and then they go to places. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this is – all you're supposed to do is get out of bed, get to the couch. Like, that's what you do to watch football, but that's not what happens. And then here it's like things start at 6, so it's like this weird time. Like, if it started at 4, it would be perfect because – at least for me, because it's like – oh, you get stuff out of the way early. You still have an evening after everything's done because everything's done at like 10. But now it's like there's this like 6 to midnight like time frame where I'm just like there's literally nothing we can do tonight. Like there's nothing we can do but watch basketball because by the time everything's over, it's going to be like pretty much too late to go do anything of significance. We can't go out to dinner because we're not, you know, what's it called, old? Like, we're not going to eat the blue plate special, so it doesn't make any sense to go to dinner at 4. Like, it's just a really odd time that I'm still getting used to.
When I lived in Austin, there's a series of restaurants called the Nighthawk. It's not the one based on the painting, which is my favorite painting ever, but just a series of these diners called the Nighthawk. And the last remaining one was in Austin, Texas, and still is. Still operates to this day, the Nighthawk Diner. And I lived down the street from it, so I used to go in there when I was single in Austin. On like Sunday mornings, I would go in and just like read the paper and have black coffee.
Yeah.
And then I would actually go in I would always have to go to work early because I was working nights at the time. So I'd actually go in and I would have that blue plate special. Like I would be in there with all the old people eating like prime rib. And it's actually like one of the most enjoyable moments. Like I got to talk to a lot of pretty cool people, but that's what your comment made me think of.
Oh, that's the difference between you and me is that I would never talk to anybody in that situation.
It's really weird because I have the anxiety disorder, and so usually I have a hard time talking to people, especially if we're in a crowd.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm in a line at like the post office, do not try to approach me. I am a mess. But if like I'm in that kind of situation where I've been there a lot, and that's the same way it was actually with going to the Pepsi Center for games, where the first 10 times I was a wreck and people were like, "What's wrong with you?" And it's really hard to be like, "Well, I kind of have this thing." Because now, fortunately, if I say like, "Well, I have anxiety disorder," they're looking at me like, "Oh, so you're like Royce White?" I'm like, "No, I'm not going to tweet at you. Like,
right?
I'm not going to hashtag. I don't speak in hashtags."
You're like, "I would like to explain this in 9 tweets in 22 seconds."
Exactly. Be well. You know, but it's just kind of hard to explain. But as I've gone there more and more, I'm actually now, like, I'm starting to, like, feel like I got the run of the place, at least the areas the media is allowed into, which is, like, 4 places, but still.
Yeah.
So I'm more comfortable and, like, chatting with the security guys and kind of getting more comfortable. And so it's one of those where it's, like, I'm not always kind of a twitching freak of nature. I'm just usually a twitching freak of nature.
Yeah, when I moved here, it was, like, you know, my lady friend would say, like, hey, why don't you go to, like, down to the coffee shop or something and, like, work, and then, you know, you can talk to people and stuff. I'm like, talk to people? Why would I go to a public place and talk to people? That doesn't make any sense.
My wife doesn't really understand. She, you know, I've got the same thing most guys do with the wife being like, why are you always on your phone? I don't think anyone really understands how great having a smartphone was for me in social situations.
Yeah.
The ability to not have to look anyone in the eye at the post office and just look at my phone constantly is the best thing that could have ever occurred to me. It's just so wonderful.
Yeah, I don't have an anxiety disorder. I'm just socially inept and socially reluctant, so it's just hard for me to come up with things to say to people.
So I have, like, two real quick things I want to touch on, and before we get into our bigger conversation.
Club basketball?
You're right. these are basketball related. So yesterday I was thinking, and recent events have actually made me think of a Bible verse.
Okay. I don't know what to...
I'm a little afraid.
No, I went to 12 years of Catholic
school.
Here's
what I was thinking. It's from Corinthians, and it's, when I was a child, I spoke like a child, thought like a child, and reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up my childish ways. Unless I'm Dwight Howard.
Sure.
That was just something that crossed in my head. Like, that's what I keep thinking of every time Dwight does something or says something. Like, he does his impression or complains about Kobe or whatever. I just keep thinking, I gave up childish things. It's like, no, he didn't. You never gave up childish things.
If anything, he waited until he was an adult to become a child.
Exactly. And the other thing I want to touch on, which is actually sad and serious, is best wishes to Leandro Barbosa.
Yeah, that sucks.
Hurt last night. Kevin Garnett pretty much, he said openly to the press that Doc Rivers had told him that he's done for the year. Third Celtic done for the year. I'm now predicting a 5-game winning streak.
Sure.
Because they get better the worse they get. The more talent they lose, the better they play.
Yeah, but someone tweeted me, they're like, did you see the Barbosa injury? And I said, no, I haven't seen it. Is it bad? And he's like, yeah, it's really bad. And I'm thinking, oh, God, I wonder if it's like his leg gets pinned or something. And he's like, yeah, there was no contact. I was like, oh, it's that kind of bad. That sucks. Because then you know it's really bad.
Yeah. It's interesting because in the NFL, it's all about, oh, he got trapped or pinned or whatever. And outside of, I guess, the Willis McGahee injury in the BCS championship game or national championship game, I guess it was then.
Yeah.
Usually it's about contact. And with the NBA, you know, it's always, you know, like with Rose, it's just, oh, no, man, there's just no contact. It's, you know,
Yeah. Nobody
hit it. You know, it's not a sprain. It's a tear. So it sucks for them, but hopefully they'll be able to rally around. And they can probably get the injury exception, I'm going to assume.
Yeah, I would assume so. They only have 3 guards on their roster now.
Which apparently, according to some sources, means that you have to trade one.
Sure.
So
got to get rid of one of them.
There's a report out that the Wolves have to trade they really want to trade point guard because they've got so many of them.
Well, what's important is they have 3 point guards and 4 guards total. So they definitely need to get rid of one. That makes sense.
Oh, sorry. So I thought we'd talk about, I want to talk to you about the subject, reading this morning on Grantland, which you shouldn't read ever. Just listen to us and we'll tell you what's important from the articles.
Sure.
But you should... Zach Lowe, who's fantastic, has an article about the Nuggets and talking about them being a title contender, and he remains skeptical, which is reasonable. I think everyone's is pretty skeptical of that. But it got me thinking about the idea of where we're at in the season and the idea of contenders and how we define them, mostly because people ask me, well, do you think the Nuggets are a contender? And the answer is, I say yes, but it's only based on certain parameters.
Yeah, I think when you say yes, I immediately want to know what you consider a contender.
Yeah, like that's the whole thing, right? Yeah. So if you want to say, because to me, and this is, I do the same thing with the idea of good players, where if you're not in a, there's a gap between good and great, and then there's great and elite. And the gap between elite and great is not that wide. It's more narrow than between good and great. Unless you're LeBron or KD, and then they're in this other level.
Yeah, well, they're not elite; they're historic.
Yeah,
like that's the other level that you can go to.
Man, if only someone was talking about that in a video format on Wednesday.
Ah, that would be great.
Tease. So likewise, to me, there are like mega contenders, and then there are solid contenders, and I started referring to this term sub contenders. Which is basically to me, it's, can I see a scenario in which a series of events that are not completely unforeseen or unpredictable, like injury, that's the easiest way, right? Like, the easiest way to get around these things is, you know, oh, well, the Milwaukee Bucks can win a championship if, you know, Derrick Rose doesn't come back at all, and the Pacers, you know, lose a first-round series to the Nets, and then Brook Lopez breaks his foot, and then LeBron returns to his home planet, then, right. The Bucks can win a championship.
If LeBron is kidnapped by aliens and then disembodied for scientific experiments, then, yeah, exactly. I could see another team in the East contending.
Right, but there's a scenario, but outside of that, there's this level where it's like, look, okay, if they get the right series of matchups and the right things occur, I can see them winning a title, and these things are not completely insane to think about. And right now, it's hard to imagine because people look at the idea of, well, you know, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, and the Clippers are definitely not going to lose in the first two rounds or in the first round. And it's one where I'm like, look, 2 years ago, we would have said the same thing about the Spurs facing the Grizzlies. This stuff happens.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to put too much stock in that series. There's a lot of context around that series. Manu Ginobili was hurt. You know, there was a lot of context around it, but these things do happen. They do occur, and at the right sequence of events. Because if you ask me, were the Nuggets really a Western Conference Finals worthy team in 2009? I'd say no. And if the Suns were a Finals worthy team in 2010, no, they weren't.
Yeah, that's the thing is that the Suns Western Conference Finals appearance in 2010. You know, people will be like, oh, you know, they broke up that team, that team was really good, and I'm just like, that was not a good team.
No.
They made it to a good place, but that was not a good team.
It was an awesome run. It was like, yeah. I mean, to me, it's a lot like the Celtics last year, where it was like, it was an awesome run.
Sure.
That was a phenomenal, I mean, when I get past the annoyance, because part of it is I get annoyed when things don't go the way I expect them to, right? Like, we all do. It's just like, yeah. As an analyst, because you take so much crap, especially from fans, and especially on Twitter, you know, you don't want people to be like, ha, they showed you. You hate that. It just gets annoying.
The one thing
I'm getting
that
more immune to it now.
The one solace that I can take out of that, though, is that I put maybe 3 seconds into my predictions.
Right.
Like, because I just, predictions are so weird to me. Like, preseason predictions I find to be really stupid. Like, I get that they're good for, like, hey, here's what we project over the season, but one thing can change everything in the league. Like, one trade, one big injury, like, and that's why, like, preseason predictions is like, oh, that's cool content for September, but once November hits, some of them can be, you know, completely irrelevant already.
I guess part of it with me, I do the same thing with them as I do power rankings, which I'm going to assume you also think are completely stupid. Like most people do.
I wouldn't say they're great.
Yeah, so, I mean, most of the writers that are doing them for your favorite websites now hate power rankings.
Yeah, like, they're a necessity, but
They think that they're stupid and horrible, and they don't. I have a colleague who's like, why do I have to write these? And I had to go through, like, an hour conversation with him to explain to him what the value is in writing them. And, I mean, there's not much. It's just mostly, it's like, it's for fun. Like, look, it's okay to entertain the reader. I don't have to be serious all the time. I like doing power rankings because I get to make fun of people.
I did them last year for HoopSpeak.
Yeah.
But I would do it, like, each one was roughly 7,000 words.
Yeah.
So, like, I went really over in depth to just kind of, like, purge any thoughts about a team from my brain for that week.
Yep.
And even then, even in that exercise of it, I still hated doing them completely.
I don't know. I enjoy doing them. I guess part of it, and you could probably argue it's because I'm a troll. That's a decent argument. I can't really argue with it. I can't like deny that. So at this point, I have to kind of own up to it. I don't embrace it, but I try and say, yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
But I do like that. People do think that they're funny, so I enjoy those.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of like the power rankings. So predictions are kind of the same thing with me, where I will say that while I am off the cuff with a lot of my comments on power rankings, I do take quite a bit of time in being like, is this team really better than this one right now?
Sure, yeah.
You know, based off of career trends and the value of the team in which I see them. Because I want to be honest with the reader. I don't like the idea of doing them of predictions. Well, here's what really bugs me is when people do predictions when they're just trying to be outlandish to get attention. That really annoys me. Like, if I do predictions, it's because I'm honest and trying to tell you, look, based off of the amount of time that I spend watching and paying attention to basketball, which is a lot because I really value my job and I want to do it well, here's what I think. So I try and put a lot into it. I understand not because it doesn't make any
difference. Yeah, my thing is, like, I'm not just, like, throwing a dart at a dartboard. Like, what I do is think, like, I'm just going to trust my instinct on this and not put a lot of thought into it. Like, I do watch an obscene amount of basketball, and so I like to think that if whatever I retain hopefully has some value, and if I get it right, cool. If not, like I probably just missed something. Like I'm just like I don't put a lot of worry into being right with predictions.
The best thing I try and do is, unless it's one that I put a lot of like stock in terms of trying to determine. So like if I do go out on a limb, it's usually because I'm like, no, I really think this. Like I've really thought a lot about this, and I really believe this to be true. And then I'll kind of, you know, do a little bit of the rubbing your shirt, like blowing your hands a little bit, you know, just like ha ha ha. Like I nailed that one. I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
But in general, whenever somebody's like, oh, you nailed this, I'm like, I got that one lucky. Like that one, I really didn't, you know, I shouldn't have seen.
Right.
Because, I mean, an example last year is when people were like, wow, you really called that the Thunder would figure out the Spurs. I was like, yeah, but I said that after I picked the Spurs to win in six. So,
yeah,
you know, how much credit are you really going to give me?
Right.
So to get back to the conversation, this idea of, like, sub-contenders, where to me, and I've said this on Denver radio lately, that to me I could see a scenario in which the Denver Nuggets can make the finals. I'm not sure if they can win the title. I think they can win the West. It would take a series of events. I feel like there's one team of San Antonio, the Clippers, and Oklahoma City, which are pretty much confirmed as the three best teams in the West. There's got to be, in my opinion, one of those teams that Denver, with this configuration, with this defense that they have, which is better than I actually argued with Zach this morning in an email that they're better than kind of the numbers indicate, because since December 17th, they have the eighth best defense in the league.
Yeah, but
and not really enough people are really paying attention to
that. That's also a very home heavy portion of the season.
It is very home heavy. I'll agree with you on that. I said that in the email. I was like, you have to understand the homestand. But watching them play, I really have a lot. I have a much better opinion of their defense than I actually thought I would. I thought at the beginning of the year, like if you asked me on media day, I would have said, well, their offense is still going to be top 10, but their defense is still going to be 15 to 20. It'll be better. It won't be 20 to 30, but it's still going to be 15 to 20. And Carl's really done a good job of getting them somewhere between. I think they're probably going to finish in the top 10. And to me, if you got a top 10 offense, a top 10 defense, you've done pretty damn well.
Sure.
So to me, I feel like as much as you want to say, okay, they can't match up with San Antonio because the system's too good and all this, and then I'm like, yeah, but some of the stylistic tendencies tend to create havoc. And when San Antonio, when you get into a havoc game, San Antonio gets a little rattled. That's why Memphis shakes them up. That's why some of the other teams that they lose to, not consistently, because they don't lose to anyone consistently, but it's one of the reasons they had problems with the Thunder. Is the Thunder created a little bit of havoc.
I don't know that I agree with that unless it's like a physical havoc. And I don't see Denver creating a physical havoc.
Okay.
That's what I would say.
Do you mean by physical havoc?
Like, I think you can beat them up a little bit, like the Grizzlies did. Like, the Grizzlies is just such a physical team.
Yeah.
Where it's not really stylistically. Like, they're very physical on the perimeter and create turnovers that way. And that's kind of how you can create a pace against them. Like, you're not pushing the ball, but you're being opportunistic off turnovers. And you can do that because you've got the defense behind you. You can be aggressive, and when they do get into the lane, like, you're pushing guys. Like, I have no problem with them not getting called on it because, you know, whatever. But, like, Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol push a lot under the boards.
Yeah.
And they get a lot of rebounds for it. And, hey, if they're not calling it, go and do it. Like, that's, you know, basically boxing out. That's what you do.
That's why Reggie Evans has a career.
Exactly. Like, that. Like, you can get away with that. And if you do it intelligently, and they do it intelligently, and that's how they just own the inside. And I think you can do that against the Spurs. I think when you're trying to create chaos through pace, like just flat out pace and up the tempo, I don't like that against the Spurs.
I don't even so much mean that. It's more to me about the athleticism. I've seen – it's weird too. So I'm kind of working off of a patchwork concept, where I've seen teams with hyper-athleticism have a really good performance against the Spurs, even if it's not consistently winning.
Sure.
And so it's one, if I think about this and I combine the idea of the athleticism of the Nuggets in general combined with Fareed's hyper-energy, and if you're talking about a guy that's going to beat you up, I mean, Fareed's just going to beat everybody to the ball.
Yeah.
Especially on those offensive rebounds, which is an area of concern for them in general. Like, I don't like the idea of Tiago Splitter trying to hang with Fareed, and Duncan needs to not be on him because he needs to not pick up fouls.
Right.
And we're not worried about him in a half court set. I mean, Duncan's not gonna be sprinting down court to try and stop Kenneth Fareed.
Right.
You know? Like, that's not gonna be happening. Tim's gonna be like, well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
you know, so I look at those kind of factors, and then their ability to create turnovers, the athleticism that they have on the wing. I just feel like that they've got an opportunity. And then with when you kind of set that mode, you have to have a team that also has an offensive gear that's higher.
Sure.
That has a mode where it's like, okay, if they can find that rhythm, then wow, some stuff will happen. Now, if you ask me, if the Nuggets and Spurs are matched up in the first or second round, I'm going to pick the Spurs. I'm going to pick them convincingly because I know that they're the better team. But if we're talking about the possibility of the Nuggets being able to make it to the Western Conference Finals or win the Western Conference Finals without the use of an act of God, I feel like there is an opportunity.
I think the Western Conference Finals are doable based on how just the road to that Western Conference Finals could land. Like, if they're only having to deal with one of those top three teams,
right?
Then, you know, it's doable. But getting to the finals,
they're not beating two. That makes sense to say that they're not beating two. But part of it with me is I feel like the Western Conference Finals, you've got so much momentum that sometimes that's a toss up. If the teams are within range. You know, you have somebody has a bad series, and then all of a sudden there's total disaster. I mean, look, the Spurs fans are going to hang on to this fact, and they clutch it very tightly to their chest, which is, you know, in their opinion, they had control of that series, and then Kendrick Perkins and Serge Ibaka went nuts from shooting, and they don't believe that that's sustainable. Now, that's partly because they don't pay attention to Serge Ibaka shooting splits.
I mean, they couldn't stop one play for four games. Right. That's why they lost. They couldn't stop one play.
Right, I agree. But I think there is some credence to say, you know, when Perkins is nailing the mid-range jumper on you, things are not going your way. there has been a momentum shift when Kendrick Perkins is scoring on you.
I mean, did he even take that many shots?
I have to look back. I know that in one game he was good. Which is, you know, that's all that matters is one game, apparently. But...
like, I mean, I get it. Like, if Kendrick Perkins hits a jumper against you, you're like, what the hell? And that's going to stand out. But I don't feel like he was spotting up or coming off curls or anything.
Right. And I get what you're saying, because, like, it is – I agree with you to the extent that it's like, well, look, Oklahoma City won because they were better. They were the best team, and they won. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast where I've been like, I think Oklahoma City may just simply be the best in the West, and they just may be – the team.
Yeah.
So I agree with that. I just have a little bit of a hesitation with completely knocking out some of these teams.
The thing that I have a problem with Denver is they do create chaos. Like, they are just a very fast athletic team. But they're not more athletic than Oklahoma City.
Correct.
And they're certainly not more skilled than Oklahoma City.
The problem with Oklahoma City, basically, is that I have a lot of issues because I thought that they would match up really well 2 years ago, and they did not.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they actually match up really well with them. Because the idea is, Wilson Chandler, I looked into it, did a whole feature on another website I used to write for on NBC, writing about how, you know, if you look back and I actually watched all the film, Wilson Chandler did a fantastic job on Kevin Durant in the regular season. He was fantastic. Like, I went back several years, and Wilson Chandler did a terrific job on Kevin Durant. And then Kevin Durant shot something like 100 of 101 in that series is what it felt like.
My point is that I don't think they can match up against the Spurs or against the Thunder because of that. The Clippers, I'm going to take the two best players in that series, which are Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. Right. Like, nobody that Denver has. And the Clippers are the deepest team in the league. So I have a hard time thinking they're going to overcome that. And then when it comes to the Spurs, I really don't like playing against pace. Now, this is 82games.com, which is, I believe, a couple of weeks behind, but they do team win-loss profiles. The worst percentage that the Spurs have are against teams with slow pace.
Yeah.
Now, it's still, they're winning two-thirds of their games, which is ridiculous that that's your worst percentage. Like, this has them, I think this is through 47 games. This has them at 12-6 against the bottom 10 in pace, 8-3 against the middle 10, and 16-2 against the top 10 in pace. Like, you just can't play fast with them. You have to find that middle ground or that slow ground, unless you're the Thunder. I mean, the Thunder don't play that fast, but like, the Thunder are they have enough skill to kind of mix that. I don't see Denver matching up well with either of those. Not that Denver's not good, but to see them getting to the finals realistically, I just don't see it.
Yeah, that's fine. I think it's more of a matter of, again, this is a pretty nuanced freaking discussion here.
Because
a part of it is, you and I have the luxury of talking about this on the podcast, because generally, if you sat us down for a 10-minute segment on television, you and I'd be like, look, the Spurs and the Thunder are the best, and it's going to come down to pretty much if Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook don't have bad games, they don't have a bad series, and they're going to win. I think you and I would probably both agree on that.
Right.
And then we're done.
Yeah, no, that's it. Good show.
Like, Western Conference playoffs. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, that's it.
And then we just dance for 8 minutes.
So we're talking, exactly, we just sit there in silence and be like performance art. You could grow a beard like Joaquin Phoenix or something.
Sure.
but we're talking about real nuance here, and the idea I'm basically trying to sell you on is, you and I can both agree, Portland, there is no circumstance in which they can win the title.
Right.
Or make the finals. There is no circumstance in which Utah can make the finals. There is no circumstance in which Houston can make the finals.
Right.
I'm looking at a tier above that that's not in, say, I would say the Memphis, Golden State, and Denver are all in the same place. Where can I see them putting things together and making a run? Yeah, I really can. And then to me, it comes down to if you can get to the Western Conference Finals and just create and ride the momentum and cause a little bit of havoc, I don't see any reason why it's completely insane. It's not likely, right? And so what we're talking about here is really degrees of probability. So if you look at it and say, you and I would probably both agree that Utah's got like a 2% chance of making the finals. Something like that.
Utah?
Yeah.
I would say less than 1%.
Less than 1% chance.
Yeah.
The Spurs have, say, I don't know, like a 40% chance?
Sure. That sounds right to me.
Right. And so what we're talking about, and then like the Thunder have a 50% chance, and everybody else is kind of in the middle, and that's all we're kind of talking about. Is I'm saying, even though it's a very poor percentage chance, it's plausible for it to occur. Versus, I cannot see any circumstance in which teams after Golden State in the standings were to make the finals. I can't see that occurring.
Right.
And in the East, it's kind of even worse. Where I'm like,
the East, there. I mean, you're gonna have a really hard time convincing me of anybody but Miami.
To me, it's 85% Miami, 10% Indiana, and then 5% everybody else. Because I feel like the Bosch thing really screws up a lot of it, because no one really remembers that even that it's like, well, yeah, it was just a half. I'm like, yeah, but they played really well in that half. To remember that Indiana, I really feel like can give this Heat team issues. I love the fact that Mahimi's playing well this year, because that was a big kind of condition. Is they needed they brought in more size, but it doesn't help if you bring in more size and the size sucks. But Mahimi's playing better. They've got size to throw at them. David West is a problem for them. George Hill is an issue for them. By the way, I have to applaud you on the George Hill kind of being on the bandwagon. I've been sold on him this year.
He's really good.
He's really good. I've really been impressed with the way
he's not all-star good, but he's a really good point guard.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? It's like if you take Tony Parker and you remove the kind of individual brilliance and just take his game management and system operation skills.
Yeah.
Hill's got a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, he comes obviously from that system, so it makes a lot of sense that way. But I've been really impressed with his ability, because I'm actually – I used to be really down on game managers, and I've actually kind of really started to appreciate what they do. Those guys that just kind of, you know – they bring the ball up court. They get guys into the offense. They make sure the ball goes where it needs to go. And if need be, they can take the runner or the three. Like, I really am starting to appreciate those guys. And I think that's mostly because of my Mike Conley situation that I have.
My Mike Conley situation.
Yes, maybe that's the name of the podcast today. The Mike Conley situation. My Mike Conley situation.
Yeah.
But, like, Chicago, we can't really put into any sort of tier right now, because we just don't know what Rose is going to look like. And we desperately need to see that before we can raise them out of the gutter.
And, well, I would say that if this was last year's team getting Rose back, I would be all in favor. Rose isn't going to be good enough. Like, I think he'll be good, but he's not going to be good enough to make up for that bench. I think that bench is crap. Yeah. Absolute crap. And that's why I don't think, like, even a healthy Rose puts them up there with Miami, like, realistically, because – not because I don't believe in Rose or I don't believe in their starters. I just – Pash Taj Gibson, like – I mean, Jimmy Butler's okay, but – They don't have the bench they had last year. They have no shooting off that bench.
I'm going to guarantee you what's going to happen. Like let's say the standings were to hold today.
Yeah.
And you know, if it's Chicago versus Brooklyn or Atlanta, it doesn't really matter. Like, you know that there's going to be like a two game set in the first round where Marco Bellinelli just goes nuts.
Oh,
that's going to irritate
sure.
the crap out of you.
Oh my God, I am going to be furious if that happens.
And then they're going to get in the second round, and Bulls fans are going to be like, you know, Bellinelli can. And
yeah.
Then no.
And I'm just going to yell at them. I'm not even going to tweet back at them. I'm just going to yell at my computer screen and hope they hear it.
Right. But I mean, 85% for Miami is pretty freaking good. Like that's pretty solid.
I honestly think that's low.
Low. You think it's 95%?
I would say 97% Miami.
Jeez.
1% Indiana, 1% New York, and then the rest is 1%. Like unless LeBron dies, like physically dies, and he's in that weird waiting period of 3 days, like they can get 2 games in before the 3 days happen, or in the 3 days before he rises again. Like that's the only way. Like there are so many biblical signs that say he would come back from that and just save the Heat. Like I really don't see it. And if Chicago had last year's team. And Rose was coming back. I could, you know, I like that Chicago team a lot, but in that, I think Indiana will give them fits, but I don't think they can close out games against them.
It's interesting we're having this discussion, which I chose a weird time because it's one where you know the trade deadline's coming, and there could be a bunch of minor moves. That's what, of course, the odds always are that there'll be very few or a select few minor moves. But I mean. There's always these big moves that can be made, and sometimes they're big moves that kind of tend to, we may think that they're better and it could not work out. Like, I don't expect the Spurs to trade for Al Jefferson. I just don't think it makes sense for either team, but
Right. Let's
say that they were to do that for whatever reason. If the Spurs were just like, you know what, we got to go for this now. We got too good a team, you know, to trust Thiago Splitter. We got to go right now. And they bring in Al Jefferson and just trust the defense. You know, if that were to happen, like let's say that we're all like, wow, they got Al Jefferson, and let's say like it just doesn't work at all and the Spurs tail off. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff that can happen in the next 2 weeks that could change not necessarily the landscape, because I don't think there's anything that's going to change you and I's mind on Miami outside of an injury, God forbid. But, you know, in the West, I do feel like there's room for like, oh, well, this, you know, maybe this does change things. I mean, there's not a lot, but I think there's a few things that could shift it. But right now, you know, I think we can agree that we agree on the basic stability of both conferences.
Yeah, I think so. Percentage.
I think we're mostly just talking about, you don't think there's any chance for anybody but San Antonio and Oklahoma City in the WCF, and I think that there's a...
No. I think the Clippers could get there. I really do think the Clippers could get there.
I have a lot... I'm really torn on the Clippers because I do feel like their matchup... They're very... To me, they are very matchup vulnerable.
Sure. Oh, I agree with that. I just... This may just be... what do you call it? My obsession with Chris Paul. My shrine that I light candles to every night of Chris Paul.
The church I've started.
Yeah.
We have meetings every Thursday.
We just call in the apartment. We just call it that awkward corner that only Zach goes to. But yeah, that's, by the way, if you ever stay here, that's the second guest bedroom. It's right in there. Won't be creepy at all. That might just be, you know, that obsession talking. But a healthy Chris Paul is just, you know, he's the third best player in the league. And I have a hard time discounting that. And I think that team is just so deep and they can hit you in so many ways. I would like them to have one more shooter that isn't Willie Green. And I don't trust Chauncey Billups yet or at all. But, you know, that I could see them getting – oddly enough, I could see them getting past the Spurs and giving the Thunder problems in the Western Conference Finals. But for me, a contender is simply – can I see that team in the finals? Like, I know that's really picky and it's really narrow-minded, but I don't think a team that gets to the conference finals is a contender. I think you have to get into the finals to be a contender.
I actually think that you've got a lot of credence there, and there's a lot of credit to that because of the fact that we've seen a lot. I mean, look at the two teams that we started talking about in the beginning of this podcast, right? So Denver made this fantastic run in 2009.
Yeah.
The Suns made this incredible run in 2010. They still didn't make the finals because the Lakers were the best team in that conference.
Right.
You know, so I'm probably giving the Western Conference Finals too much of a crapshoot.
But maybe, I mean, you know, to get to the – it's not like getting to the conference finals in the East. Getting to the Western Conference Finals in the West – is really hard. Like, that is a really hard road, so maybe I should be more lenient, but it's just hard for me to get past that. Like, if you're not playing for the title, I have a hard time thinking that you're a contender.
I don't like taking one season and trying to prove that that mean that that proves anything. I'm talking about small probabilities here.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But I do want to point this out. Here's one that sticks with me: the 2007 Western Conference Finals. Right. So you can't. There is very little. We can. Anybody that says that the Spurs are the best team in the league that year is out of their minds and is basically doing revisionist history. They're basically saying, well, they won the title, so therefore we're going to work backwards and improve this. The Mavericks and Suns were significantly better that season.
Oh, I wouldn't say significantly better.
Okay. Yeah, marginally. I would say they were marginally better.
Okay.
My point was more that you can't, like, they weren't all equal. They weren't all three. It was like there were the Suns and the Mavericks, and then right below them was the Spurs.
Well, what's funny is, like, you know, it's an obvious comparison because of the 1-8 upset, but the 2007 Mavericks and the 2011 Spurs, there are a lot of similarities. Like, those were two unbelievable regular season teams that lost in the first round.
Because of a matchup.
Yeah, because of a matchup. And kind of threw things, you know, out of whack.
So then you know, look at what happens. So then the Warriors go on, and then Utah gets a break because it gets to face the Warriors. So the Utah advances to the Western Conference Finals.
And that team was not that good.
No, and you know, and the Spurs clobbered them because they were clearly a better team.
Right.
But I'm trying to, and I mean, maybe you can make the argument. Let's say the absolute chaos were to happen in the playoffs, and again, we're not thinking this is going to happen for those people listening. We're talking about.
Oh, they've already stopped listening, and they're tweeting us furiously.
Yeah, that's fine. Let's say that Houston goes in and just causes absolute chaos with that system. Like, they just shoot 90% from three for four games.
Sure.
Okay, and they upset San Antonio. And then let's say something else crazy happens, and Denver were to advance, and then you know I could definitely see a scenario in which like Denver got to play Houston or something, and then so Denver makes Western Conference Finals and they get smacked by one of those other three teams, which are significantly better, but may not have been necessarily as good as Oklahoma as San Antonio. But maybe that's kind of the difference right this year, is that you got three teams that you're legitimately like, you know, they're really good. And actually, I mean, as we talk about this contender, you know, system. It's interesting because you put Cap with the Clippers there, and I would put the Clippers more towards Golden State, Denver, Memphis.
Yeah, and again, that's probably just my Chris Paul, you know.
I know that you're an acolyte, but I do want to mention this. Chris gets beat up. He gets beat up bad, and that's why. You know, he ran out of steam against the Lakers, and he takes these breaks during the season to try and. You know, rest himself so he's healthy. He got beat up against the Lakers within his last season with the Hornets, and he was a wreck after that Memphis series last year. He was just a physical wreck.
Right, but he got beat up against the Hornets or with the Hornets because he didn't have anybody else. Like, he had David West and that's it.
Right, so that's the idea. But here's an issue, though, right? So if you're going to say, you know, he's not going to have to carry that kind of load, at some point you have to also say he's got to be on the bench for a little bit of it, and that means you really got to trust Eric Bledsoe.
Here's the thing, and this was going to sound. Don't laugh at this as much as you're going to be instinctually inclined to do. I trust Jamal Crawford. I trust him in that role off the bench to when he's running the offense. I don't trust him running offense for 20 minutes a game, but for 10 minutes, and then the other 5 minutes is going to be Eric Bledsoe just trying to wreak havoc. I trust that combination off the bench.
Here's an interesting question. Who do you trust more, Danny Green or Jamal Crawford?
Jamal Crawford.
Because of the big shot ability?
Because he can create.
Okay.
Like, Danny Green can't create his own shot.
Right.
And so then he's relying
on better. He has been getting better at that, I'll say. Actually, if you get a chance, go look at his splits for the mid-range. It's actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's not a bad player, and he is getting better as a player, but you're not running a clear out for him. And maybe you shouldn't be running to clear out for Jamal Crawford as much as you do, but he can break down the defense. And when you make the defense make decisions, especially in the playoffs, that can be a huge thing. And he makes the defense make decisions.
Here's one of the things, maybe, and I think I really am coming to more and more to this kind of thought process.
You're the gunner?
No, not. I'm actually saying the opposite.
Like, no, that's stupid. I still don't believe in it.
No. The idea I'm thinking is, I'm not sure that this concept that you have to have that guy to go ISO and pull up, I'm not sure it's a good plan anymore, especially with the way health defenses have evolved. Because I'm thinking back, and even, like, you say the Thunder, right, and all, they run all this isolation offense. the big shots that I remember from Durant, I can remember a lot of them that were ISO, but a lot of them I remember them being either out of the post or off the cut or some sort of setup to get him the ball in the motion of a set and not just him rising and firing. Now, James Harden, I remember a lot of those just like, okay, whatever. Yeah. You know, like Harden's pull-up threes against the Spurs, and that's when a Spurs fan this morning was like, don't you feel like that's going to be an impact because he was huge? And I'm going to reply after we're done with this podcast. Yes, but unfortunately, Kevin Durant hadn't reached God level mode. So.
Right, and Russell Westbrook can still do some things. Like he's good. Like,
the biggest thing with Westbrook, and no one's paying attention to this. No one is paying attention to this. His assist ratio is way, way, way up.
Really high.
I mean,
it's really high.
It's almost like he's a point guard.
Weird. It's almost like they took away a really good distributor from the team, who was really good in pick and rolls, and Westbrook said, oh, "Okay, I'll get it."
I got you. No
yeah,
problem.
That's fine. I'll get it. No, here's my point on the isolation. I'm not saying just clear out and go nuts.
But that's what Jamal does best, though, right?
Not necessarily. What I'm saying, like, if it's resulting in 21 foot jumpers, pull up jumpers, that's a problem. But what Jamal does doesn't do it maybe as much as he should, but he does more than a lot of those isolation players. Is he gets into the middle of the floor, like he gets into the free throw area, and that's when a defense has to make a decision. Is when you break down. If you're just isolating and taking long jumpers, yeah, you as a defense, you don't have to do much because your help is there, you're set up for rebounding, it's fine. But he does, like, especially I've noticed this with the Clippers, maybe because they have so many weapons, so it's easier for him to get there. But he gets to the middle of the floor so easily. And then are you going to step up and help? Are you going to drop down from the wing? Like, what are you going to do? And he is a willing passer. Like, he loves to shoot, but he's a willing passer, and he can make you pay in different ways. And their ball movement is so good because of that, because everyone is willing to make the pass. That's where I think he's dangerous, as opposed to your typical, like, clear out, I'm gonna get this step back jumper guy.
The other reason I would actually tend to agree with you on Crawford's impact is everyone kind of, you know, says, like, are you really gonna trust Jamal Crawford? And I get upset because I understand why no one watched the, I guess, 2011 series between the Hawks and the Magic.
Yeah.
I get why you didn't watch that, but he was really great in that series.
Yeah, he was.
That was the best Hawks series I've ever seen. They were really good that year. They were not really good, but on a Hawks level. They were really good. That was a really good Hawks team.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a legitimate, and everyone kind of, here's what bugs me is, in retrospect, they're like, well, the Magic clearly suck because they lost to the Hawks. It's like, you didn't watch the series. You know, they coached the hell out of that series. They played really well. The Hawks had good players. Why is everyone so mean? leave Josh Smith alone.
No, I will not.
Speaking of, so he's rumored to be going like 1,900 places now.
Yes.
I keep holding out hope. I do wonder. I thought about this more than once. I really have. I really wonder if part of it is he's just been so disgusted by the organization because he's been pissed at them since he was in restricted free agency.
Yeah.
They didn't offer him a deal. For those of you too young to remember, like 4 years ago, I'm going to cry now. He entered restricted free agency, and the Hawks just basically were like, good luck. Like, oh, you play an all-star level for us for a couple of years. Have fun. Like, let's see what you can get. And it does tell you about the league perception of him because no one came with an offer.
Right.
He just sat there. And most of it, though, if you look back at the reports, there were a lot of indications that basically teams were like, why am I going to help out Atlanta? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, we make him an offer and then Atlanta matches. The only way to get him to screw Atlanta is to offer him a max. I'm not offering Josh Smith a max. So there's not really any incentive for me to go out and make him an offer because they're going to match anything.
Which you actually saw that with Brooke Lopez this past offseason. It wasn't until, like, I think it wasn't until the Gerald Wallace contract was signed. Maybe I'm getting the time mixed up, but teams didn't really go after Brook Lopez until it was like, oh, let's force them into giving him a max deal.
When the Bobcats were like,
yeah, Bobcats like, oh, we'll do it.
He's out there, we'll do it.
Yeah, like that put pressure on the Nets to get it done, and that's really what you need to do. Like, I'm interested to see if the Kings give Tyreke Evans a qualifying offer, and he's a restricted free agent. I'm interested to see how teams approach that. Will they try to pressure the team into giving him a big deal?
Yeah. So the Grizzlies finally came through with an offer that was way underpriced for him. Because the Grizzlies basically threw whatever cap room they had left. They were like, well, if you don't want him, we'll take him. And I was very excited at that moment in time. That was a happy 24 hours for me. And then the Hawks matched in a hurry. And he's been stuck there, and he hasn't liked the direction and all that stuff. So part of me does wonder if a lot of his decision-making is based off of he's got no real incentive to be disciplined. And I wonder if he goes somewhere else and he gets a coach that really is like, look, I wonder basically if he goes somewhere with a history of winning like L.A. or and this won't happen, but L.A. or you know, Boston or wherever,
yes.
If it wouldn't be more of a – if he gets a coach that really gets through to him and is like, okay, that was cute in Atlanta. We don't do that here. Cut it out.
Honestly, you know, I think Mavericks fans are they're intrigued, but they're a little terrified. But putting him with Carlisle, I could get into that. I think Carlisle could do a lot of good things for him.
Yeah, because Carlisle would respect him as a veteran and as a star while also being like, I really need you to not do this.
Yeah.
Versus Darren Collison, where he's just like, what are you doing? Why do you hate me?
Right.
And even O.J. Mayo, I think a lot of the times, I think he's got a really complicated relationship with O.J. Mayo because it's like he recognizes Mayo does so much for him offensively, but he also doesn't like necessarily the way he does it.
Right.
On either end of the floor. So I think like Carlisle's got a very complicated relationship with his team right now. But I think it's interesting to kind of look at, you know, it's one where if you're a lottery team, you definitely don't want to go after Josh Smith. But I think if you're an established culture, like the Mavericks, I think I agree are a really good fit. But I think there's a number of teams that I think it really makes a lot of sense. I do wish fans would consider, and we talked. Maybe we should have thrown this one into the trade rules because one thing that bugs me is when fans don't really regard their team's culture much when they're trying to aim for free agents.
Yeah.
Or trade guys. Like Spurs people telling me, like, what, do you think we can get Josh Smith? I'm like, Popovich is not going to go after Josh. That's not his guy. It doesn't make any sense.
I would like to see that, though. Maybe it's just a curiosity thing.
It's not that he doesn't like Josh Smith as a player. It's not that the Spurs are not athletic at all. They have lots of athleticism. Manu Ginobili is sneakily one of the most athletic guys I think I've ever seen. But.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, he's just.
He's a side-to-side athlete, which is very underrated, especially in today's game.
It's almost like instead of having athletic muscles, he has athletic joints. That's kind of what I think of.
At James Harden. James Harden can get up and dunk on somebody, but he's side-to-side athletic.
Yeah. But I'm just like, Josh Smith doesn't fit what they do. And it's not about, you know, because everyone, and they want to throw out this thing of, well, they brought in Steven Jackson. Like, okay, bring in one guy who happens to have a very specific relationship with both Duncan and Popovich does not prove that they take on these guys that have these kind of situations. It's just not going to happen.
And I think this is a saying or something, but someone says, like, you can deal with one knucklehead, but two, kind of throws you off. And mm-hmm. and that's that would be a situation where it's like, Steven Jackson is probably okay at this point, but do you want to risk it? Is it worth it to risk the end of Tim Duncan's career? You know?
Yeah. One knucklehead and you can be the Spurs. Two knuckleheads and you're the mid-2000 Knicks.
Right.
that's how the phrase should go.
Three and hello, Wizards.
I think that there are places he can go where he can be successful. Like, I don't want to see him trade to Utah. That's a terrible fit.
Yeah,
he's just going to do the same things in Utah he did. He's going to do more of the stuff he does in Atlanta for Utah.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, based off of last night, big comeback win against the Pacers when they were without Darren Williams. What do you think about the Nets right now?
I don't know. They're a team. They
breaking analysis.
Yeah. I'm fine with Joe Johnson. I'm fine with Joe Johnson getting the majority of the ball handling duty. Like CJ Watson as a starting point guard, and I know Tyshawn Taylor had a great night and hit a big shot, but I'm not really ready to trust him with the ball yet. I just don't think that their guard play is good enough, and I'm wondering. Can they make Marshawn Brooks, Joe Johnson backcourt work for 15 minutes a game, 20 minutes a game? Like, that's what I would more like to see than them just trying to plug point guards into the spot.
Well, I mean, it's less about with Darren out for, because he's only going to miss one more game and then we get the All-Star break.
Yeah.
But I'm more trying to figure them out from a kind of a macro level. I asked Devin Carpentian. I always wince when I try and say his name, thebrooklyngame.com. I asked him if the team was a disappointment yesterday. Because I think it's interesting to look at their record. If you look at their record, you're like, if you're, you know, preseason, you've been like, they're right where they should be.
Right.
But it feels like they're this disappointment. Like, they feel like they are not necessarily to you and I, because you and I have, what's it called, either realistic or completely brutally skeptical opinions most of the time.
I should put brutally skeptical on my business cards.
You really should. Zach Harper, brutally skeptical. Brutally skeptical. I mean, he said to me yesterday, in the aggregate, not really. This is the first really disappointing stretch from my perspective. This is before the win last night.
Yeah.
He thought even the one that led to Avery's firing, I thought it was mostly because Brooke was injured / not 100% and was palpable. But Devin's pretty generous to the team because he's just glad they don't suck. He's just excited for them.
Right.
He and I argued endlessly this summer about the contracts and the length of everything and the kind of approach to just throwing money at the problems and whether it was worth it. And he thought it was because they needed to start off well in Brooklyn. And that's a pretty decent perspective.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's interesting just because I feel like Nets fans still kind of think that they should be better. I think it's mostly that they're lacking in signature wins. You know, they've beaten the Knicks a couple times, but part of it is a division. If you're going to play a team four times, they're going to get at least one win on you. It's just really rare that you sweep a team in your division unless they're horrible.
Yeah. I think with them, I think it's disappointing. I think they are disappointing for the simple fact that it's cool that Brook Lopez has been better than expected. And I even expected him to be pretty good this year, but I think he's been much better than I expected. But it's been neutralized by Deron Williams has been disappointing.
Yeah.
And because he's the star of the team, he's the face of the franchise, when he's disappointing, you just have this overall disappointing feel with the team.
And a lot of it is that he's not really the leader that they kind of expected either. I mean, there's...
Yeah, that's true.
It's been weird to see his evolution because he was very quietly. He was like the good dude in Utah that just ran the system and was the underrated guy. And he's kind of evolved, and there's a lot. I mean, I think there's an article on Sheridan Hoops today kind of about how scouts and GMs kind of consider him to be kind of a prima donna.
Yeah.
And that was kind of – it shocked me because it started in 2010 when the All-Star game was going on. And the Melo stuff was being talked about. Ken Berger actually was the first one to say Deron Williams was asking guys about playing in New York this summer. And then, you know, Williams famously said, I've had a hamburger, ha, 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 ha. But then, like, 2 weeks later, he got traded. It was 4 days later, he got traded.
Yeah.
Out of the blue. And then everyone was like, what? And it turns out, you know, he was going to bolt. And so it looks more and more like his attitude's been really weird. He hasn't really taken as much culpability as you kind of would have expected. And he sniped by Avery in the system and everything, and you're kind of expecting. And now I've seen some comments from him that were good,
yeah,
in terms of being like, I haven't played as well as I need to.
Yeah, I think he's owned up. I think he's tried to find excuses. Like, he blamed the system, and then he blamed, like, his last 2 years of just never really getting a break to, like, recoup his body and train properly. And at a certain point, he was just like, yeah, I'm just not hitting shots. I'm not playing well. Like, I don't think he's passing the blame. I think he's maybe troubleshooting, trying to figure out, all right, why am I not so good anymore?
I think about this more and more lately because Deron's an example. I think JaVale McGee's an example. Talk about that as a disparity between guys. Fans just, they overreact so much to even, not just a bad couple months, but even like one bad season. Roy Hibbert's another one. I think Roy Hibbert's eventually, I saw him hit a couple shots last night where I was like, that's it. Like, that's the Roy Hibbert that I know.
Yeah.
But let's say Robert Hibbert never gets his game right. And, you know, or his offensive game right. He just is this guy. That doesn't mean he's going to be the same dude next year.
Right.
You know, you sign a guy to a 4-year contract. Yes, you may end up trading him. But you're not just hopeful for, you know, you want him to be good off the bat. But if he's not good off the bat, it's not like, oh, the entire contract was a waste. If he's bad the first year and great the next three, you know, you've still gotten 3 great years. You won that deal.
Oh, for sure. And that's the thing. Is like, who is it? Maybe it's Kobe who talks about, like, going back in the lab each summer. Or, you know, one of the superstars says that. Like, oh, I'm going to go back in the lab this summer and figure things out. Like, the summer is a reset. Like, you will more often than not see trends of a guy just kind of being the same way year to year. But the summer is a chance for guys to get better, especially someone like Roy Hibbert. Like, he's not making hook shots. Like, it's not like he's decided to start taking 17-footers every game.
Right.
Like, he's just not making hook shots.
He's not that, Josh Smith.
Yeah, exactly. He's just not making hook shots that he's always made. So you start thinking, all right, were the first 4 years a fluke with that hook shot, or is this year a fluke? What's more likely? Is it the wrist injury that's bothering him, or was it just defenses didn't know how to play him before, and now they do? Like, they're, you know, it's kind of, you know, they're both, I think they're valid sets of questions, but the summer will give you a will give him a chance to kind of figure it out too.
And the response, I think, for most people is, was he really that good the first, outside of last year? And the answer is, if you watched him, yeah, he always had the hook shot. He was learning everything else.
Yeah.
He was learning how to get the putback dunks. He was learning how to get the tap backs in, back ends. He was learning how to do the, you know, up and unders and stuff like that. It does take a while for big men to learn. I mean, that's a big thing with JaVale is Nuggets management. You know, you would expect, like, the fans freak out. They're like, you gave him 44, 48 million, whatever much it was, you know, and he's not even starting. And it's like, well, one, George Karl doesn't give a damn about that.
Right.
Because, you know, Kosta Kubas isn't finishing games now. That's one thing I did say this morning is they have like, I likened it to a pitching rotation. They have their starter, which is Kosta Kubas, and he gives them a good 5.5 innings.
Right.
And then they've got JaVale, who comes in as reliever, and he gives them a good, you know, 2 innings, and they don't have a closer center. They need, like, a veteran to, like, close things out. They need one guy to be able to go in there at the end of games.
Well, and just the whole – this is probably way too late in the podcast to get into, but the whole concept of starting is really overblown.
So stupid.
It, like, finishing games is always more important. And two, balance in your rotations is the most important.
Yeah.
Like, having – you could have really good scorers in your starting lineup, but don't you need someone for the second unit? And you're not doing hockey line changes at all, but – you do need. There is a staggering with most rotations, where my example is Timberwolves fans are like, "Well, we should be developing Alexei Shved. He should be starting at shooting guard, not Luke Ridenour." It's like, right, but you need Barea and Shved playing together off the bench because they work the best at, you know, together rather than with other combinations. And so part of that development for Shved is learning when to pick his spots, how to play with different guys. Starting isn't going to make him a better player. It's just going to mean he starts the game. And I just think that worrying about who is starting loses perspective on what the team is trying to do with balance in the rotations, with making sure there is never a unit on the floor, or at least most coaches do this, there's never a unit on the floor where you're at a disadvantage.
If you want to talk about, like, a major weakness for the Nuggets, they banked a lot on the idea that Andre Miller and JaVale McGee were going to be great together. Like, that was going to be the secret, is JaVale lobbing to JaVale, or Dre lobbing to JaVale.
Yeah.
That's, like, the perfect combination. They're a negative 0.4.
Yeah.
They were before the loss in overtime.
Yeah.
So, like, that hasn't worked out versus, I think, Lawson and Brewer and McGee are terrific. Like, yeah. There's different combinations where Iguodala's been very, very good. Like, he's plus 6.9, I think, with Gallinari. So there's combinations that you think are going to work and haven't. Andre Miller's kind of been quietly been an issue for them, even though he's made a lot of huge fourth quarter plays. But with JaVale, I was going to mention that, like, with Denver, they didn't sign him for this year at all. He was a free agent. They basically gave him this year because they want as a payment for getting to retain his rights for the next 3 years.
Right.
They want to see how he does when he's 26, 27, 28. That's what they care about. Because that's when a lot of big men develop. Like, Larry Sanders is the exception. That's why his play this year has been so phenomenal. Is he's 24 and just killing it.
Right.
Hopefully that back injury is okay. You want to do games?
Yeah, we got 6 of them on the schedule. 2 of them might be good.
Maybe.
Maybe 3 will be good. Blazers Heat could be good.
Chaos Machine is always... Chaos Engine can always be good, but that's actually kind of died lately.
Yeah, I think that'll be a good game. I'm locking in that's a good game tonight.
Lakers Suns was pretty fun last time.
Jesus.
Just saying.
Oh, the return of Michael Beasley.
The Lakers have to win. Well, they don't have to win this game, I should
nope,
say.
Nope, they absolutely have to win this game. You can't lose to the Suns. The Suns aren't good.
Yeah, but if they lose, are we really going to be all that shocked? And is it going to really kill their playoff chance? Like, it doesn't matter. You know, they can lose. It's fine. They used this team when it was under Phil Jackson in the championship years would lose to stupid teams all the time. The only problem is now they lose to the good teams too.
Right.
It's really the mediocre that they handle pretty well.
What's the line on Suns Lakers?
Lakers by 9.
Oh. Oh, that's optimistic. I mean, I think the Lakers are going to win this game, but That's a lot of points for a four-game under 500 team.
Man, did you see my tweet yesterday once they announced that Parker was out in that Spurs game?
No, I missed it.
Okay, here's what happened. So you and I talked yesterday, and it was Bulls minus two over San Antonio, and I was like, how is this possible? And we were both like, oh, San Antonio by a mile. And then at 30 minutes or an hour and a half more game time, Pop says, oh, by the way, we're sitting Tony too. And I just tweeted you. I was like, there's the line. But then the Spurs went ahead and won by double digits because they're not human.
Yeah.
They're androids. I'll tell you, here's a sneaky fun game tonight. Raptors-Nuggets.
Yeah, that'll be good, actually.
Nuggets are favored by two in Toronto. I'm definitely taking Toronto in this one. I think Denver's going to have an emotional letdown. It's a third game of a road streak. They're one game away from the All-Star break. They're going to be looking forward to Brooklyn. Toronto's been pretty hot with Rudy Gay. Iguodala is a game-time decision. This is like a recipe for disaster. I'm taking Toronto here.
Oh, I really hope Iggy plays just because I like seeing him go against Rudy.
Yeah, it should be fun. Two guys that can't hit mid-range jump shots is always a wonderful combination.
It really is.
The over-under is 207.
Ooh.
That's a lot of points.
Ooh, that's a lot of points.
Which is nothing compared to the over-under on rematch of Rockets-Warriors.
Let me guess the over-under.
Go ahead.
322.
158 to 149. No, the over-under in an NBA game tonight for Rockets at Warriors is 220.
Woo!
220 points.
That's a lot of hooch.
That's a lot of hooch.
Wow.
And no, you want to submit. Here's the amazing part. That's down. It opened at 223.
I kind of think it should be over. That's crazy.
If it goes to overtime, it will. If it goes to overtime, it'll probably go to overtime at like 120 to 115.
Look, you should only be doing this if, one, you live in a place where gambling is legal, and two, you can afford to be homeless if you get this wrong. But I would bet everything I have on the over. If I were you. If I were you, the listener. And don't hold me responsible for anything when it goes wrong.
But other than that...
But if you fit that criteria, go over.
Warriors are favored by five. They like the revenge match.
Yeah, I like the Warriors in this.
Really? Warriors have been bad.
I know, which makes me think they're going to just have this turnaround game.
Interesting. Heat are favored by 11.5 versus Portland.
I think Portland makes that closer.
You like them? You going to take the points?
Yeah, I think I would take Portland to lose by like 7 or 8.
That's pretty good. Grizzlies, Kings. I feel like the Grizzlies have faced Sacramento like 100 times.
Yeah, they play them every other week.
Memphis is favored by 9. I'm probably taking Memphis here. Memphis actually has looked really good the last two games. It's almost like we shouldn't make snap judgments about a trade after three games.
Yeah, no, and they're playing the Kings on the road.
Yeah.
Kings on the road is not a good idea.
Here's a tricky one. Jazz at home, they're getting 5.5 versus the Thunder. This is one where you want to just kind of be like, Oklahoma City's better, let's just go there.
Yeah, I probably would have said like Thunder by 6 or 7, so 5.5 kind of slaps me in the mouth. I'd take the Thunder and lay the points.
Let's see, 4 games out of the 6 tonight have an over-under of over 200, and one of the other games is a 199.
Get ready for points.
Yeah, it is a points night in the NBA. This is fun. The contenders conversation was much more fun than I thought it would be.
Yeah, no, I think we're... I don't know that we settled anything. I don't think we came to any conclusions. I think we just showed our...
Did we ever come to any sort of conclusion?
No, but we showed our work, and that's important when getting graded.
You know, as basic podcast is like we talk about random things for a little while. We make a couple pop culture references and eventually say, I don't know.
Yeah, after 8 minutes introduction of us just talking about our nights that have nothing to do with basketball.
And yet it's being successful. Cheers to us.
Yeah. Yay us. Maybe that should be the title of the podcast today. Yay us. All right. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.